You're listening to a Bucks Plus audio production on the Bucks Plus Network.
Your weekly pulse on the Milwaukee Bucks, straight from a Bucks legend. This is Here District with Marcus Johnson, alongside his son and 1995 NCAA champion, Chris. Here's MJ.
All right, welcome to Here District. I'm Marcus Johnson, captain of this vessel on this fantastic voyage following Bucks basketball all season long. My first mate, Chris Johnson, with the only father and son combination in NCAA history to win a national championship at the same school. That's the caveat. UCLA at the same school. We made history. And speaking of making history, we've got, it's just an iconic celebrity, producer, director, actor, giant in the music industry, Ice Cube. Man, we thank you so much for coming by Here District today, man. Welcome.
Man, thanks for having me. You know, what's cool about what you just said is, you know, my first movie was Boys in the Hood. It was a song I had wrote when I was with a group called NWA with Eazy-E. That was my first movie. And years later, my son come along. His first movie is Straight Outta Compton, which is the story of my group.
Yep.
So it's almost like we play for the same team, you know what I mean? And we both kind of scored our, you know, basically introducing ourselves to the world through NWA. Yeah. Me through the music, him through the movie. So in some ways, it's similar to what you guys did on the basketball court.
And you just ruined my joke, Ice Cube, because I was going to say, how does it feel? I was going to mention that my son Josiah, podcasting with Gil's Arena, does a great job with them. My other son Josh starred in what was that, Chris?
All the Queen's Men.
Tyler Perry's All the Queen Men. Another son, Mariah. How does it feel to be the second best actor in the family? That was good.
It was pretty good. You know, I'm gonna get that to him. You know, I'll take the best rapper.
Yeah, sir.
Take the best actor.
Yeah. No, he's good. He was good in Swagger. I don't know how much of that series you saw, but man, I love that show. And Kevin Durant had, it seemed like it was kind of based on his life. I think Lauryn Hill's nephew was the lead, who actually had some game. But your son, Coach Ike, I mean, he, man, that's when I first noticed him and his chops as an actor. So that was just a real discovery for me watching him in that show. But he's done a great job in everything I've seen him in.
Yeah, he's been brilliant, you know. And I just happy to see him living out his dream when it comes to being a part of Hollywood at the highest levels. So.
Yeah. And final point on that. So I'm going to have my people contact your people. I got a screenplay I wrote about a father and son dynamic firefighter screenplay in the 1950s, integrating the LA Fire Department. Great fire son, father son dynamic. We'll talk later, but just keep that in mind.
Plug it.
Well, Burning for Justice. Come
MJ,
on, yeah.
Okay.
Ed is actually with UTA right now, and I'll send you the coverage. Great coverage on that, but we'll talk more about that later. But man, we got you here because, first of all, where'd you grow up? I want to know a little bit about you, your background. I know LA, but where in LA did you grow up? What part of the city?
Van Ness and Imperial, that area.
Woo!
that was basically that area of Van Ness, Imperial, 108th, Western.
So that's Washington. Washington High School. Washington High School. You're supposed to go to Washington. Yes. Yeah. See, I
actually went to Taft.
I know you went to Taft, but that's Washington. That's Washington's neighborhood. I mean, that's
definitely Washington High School neighborhood.
Right. Yeah. Because I played. I grew up with James Lofton, Hall of Famer for the Green Bay Packers It's Jesse Owens Park now, but it was Sportsman's Park back in the day when we played there.
I remember Sportsman.
Yeah. Right on, Century and Western or something like that. So anyway.
Western. You got it right.
Okay, because you capture, man, the essence of Los Angeles in your music like few others have been able to do. And as an old school guy, I've always appreciated that. And the one thing that connects me with your music, man, is that these samples are from songs of my era. So you got the Isley Brothers, you got the Daz Band, and it gives me cred with my kids because I can say, "Oh yeah, that's the Daz Band, or that's Between the Sheets." You know, like, how do you know all that? So that's my era. So you've been able to bridge, man, some generations, man, with your music that they probably without even intending to. I don't know.
Yeah, I grew up. You know, my brothers and sisters, you know, they're about. You know, y'all are probably in the same school. You know, they, you know, few years older than me, and they would always hit me to the funk, you know what I mean, yeah, to the good music, to the soul music, the R&B. And we grew up loving that music. So when it was time to do our music, that's where we sampled from.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's a great era. You know, yeah, it don't get no better than the music, man, from the 60s, 70s, and 80s. And so, you know, I still lean back and grab some of that music, because now the newer generation need to, you know, they need to hear it through me and then find the original. So,
yep,
you know, great music never die.
Yes.
So I'm proud. And, you know, that's L.A. You know, L.A., people think L.A. is surf and sun, but it's a culture in L.A. that's a little more street, you know, a little more funky than that. So,
yeah,
I love to be able to present that in the music.
And Chris, help me out with this, but we were talking. There's a whole dialect of talking that couple of generations behind. We go, "What's up, homie? What's up?" You know, it's a whole way of talking in L.A. that's really, yeah, special to L.A. That it just came out of nowhere for me, because I wasn't plugged into the street scene. And all of a sudden, my nephew, people like that, I'm hearing them talk. You know, and yeah, it's a whole other dialect. So yeah,
nah.
Yeah.
But Cube, I want to go back to America's Most Wanted, because, yeah, we're on the anniversary. You dropped that 30 something years ago. It was
35.
God, it was, wow, one of the defining soundtracks of my childhood. You can ask my pops. I mean, I was reciting your lyrics, bro, when I'm 13, 14 years old, verbatim. So, you know, already know what time it is. But my question is this: you left NWA around that time. How did, mm-hmm, that period shape your voice as a solo artist?
Well, you know what I loved about NWA is, before it was called gangster rap, we called it reality rap. Mm. You know, gangster rap is something that ended up being coined by the media and just took a life of its own. So I was always into what's called street knowledge, being able to hit people on what we were going through growing up, and, you know, also hit the people that we grew up with to what government was doing to, you know, curve their progress and success. So, you know, I love that element of it. When I was in NWA, I was a member, so it was Eazy-E show. It was, yeah, the Dr. Dre show. But when I got, went solo, it was my show, and I could do the kind of records that I felt from the heart that needed to be done, and it was always, to me, a form of street knowledge. I wanted to teach you with my music and not just brag and boast.
Man, I mean, when you dropped No Vaseline, I mean, it was life changing, because we hadn't heard somebody go that hard at another group of people. I mean, you went hard. You crucified them. I think for me at the time, I was like, Cube is just sending a message that he's here. Now, my question to you at that time, like, was there pressure on you to outdo what you had done with NWA when you were a solo artist? And how did you, like, tap into that to where you tried to live up to that pressure?
I didn't really feel that pressure. My pressure was to establish myself and to do the kind of records that I felt would connect with the people.
Yeah.
When I left, you know, I really didn't look in my rearview mirror until they started talking shit about me, you know, and then, you know, from there, we was like, uh-oh, okay, I gotta, you know, I can't just let it slide.
Right.
This rap game, so you gotta respond. And so, you know, I was like, yo, I'm not playing with it. You know, they may be jabbing, but I'm gonna try to end this. And yeah, I was ready for more rounds. So it was something that I felt like, okay, here we go. It's about to be kind of a war of attrition when it comes to lyrics. And here we go. And fortunately, it stopped with one record. We didn't have, yeah, to go back and forth and forth and back.
Well, and that was my question. In terms of repercussions, was it on the Gary Payton, Jordan Crawford level in terms of big three confrontations? I mean, was it something that you felt you had to watch your back? You felt like, you know, I'm, yeah, putting this out here, and now I don't know where this is going to go and how it's going to go?
Yeah, man, because, you know, they right there in Compton. That ain't too far.
Yeah.
You could throw a rock and hit South Central from Compton. So, you know, you definitely had to, you know, have your head on a swivel. And, you know, this was a family feud. So, mm-hmm, not only did we know each other, but we knew people who knew,
yeah,
you know, everybody knew where we were and how to get to us, because we all knew the same people. So you could be doing something and they pull up on you. So yeah. We was always, you know, weary that it could get physical. You know, yeah. It did a few times. You know, we did get into a few squabs. But at the end of the day, cooler heads prevailed.
Who got into a squab? Who was squabbing? This is breaking news for me.
Yeah, we got in a squab with Above the Law a few times.
Okay.
You know, one time it was me and Crazy Tunes, and the other time it was the Lynch Mob and them.
Mm.
So, yeah, it got physical.
Yeah.
But at the end of the day, like I said, cooler heads prevailed. You know, me and Easy talk, and he was like, man, we just, we came from the streets. Like, we trying to do something to get us out the streets, but if we're going to just bring the streets into the music industry, we're going to be back, or somebody going to be in jail, somebody going to get hurt or killed, you know what I mean? We're going to be back to square one, so let's just keep it on wax. If we don't like each other, keep it on wax, man. Don't let it get physical. Don't let it get in the streets. And that was the best thing that happened.
So listen, man, let's talk a little bit about what one of the main reasons we got you here, the Big Three. I mean, and so you've tapped into something else in terms of just an opportunity for, first of all, for older players to still kind of get basketball, not so much out of their system, but a means of expression for them in a great forum, great platform in terms of, you know, national TVs, crowds and all that. Was this your brainchild? Did somebody bring this to you? Did you play a lot of 3-on-3? Where did this idea come from?
Oh, man, we used to battle in my backyard. You know, we called it the forum. In the 80s, it was a physical game. You know, we wanted to be you, Daryl Dawkins. We wanted to be, you know, Moses Malone. You know,
Dr. J. You
know, it wasn't soft at all. So we would have some epic 3-on-3 games in the backyard, you know, banging up against the garage, you know what I mean? Like late at night, neighbors calling saying, you know, it's time to put that ball down, you know, it's,
yes, sir.
So that's what I grew up on. And I actually love the 3-on-3 better than 5-on-5 because, you know, being a amateur, you know, you touch the ball a lot more in 3-on-3. You actually can get involved in the game. And, you know, in a 5-on-5 game, you can get lost.
Yeah.
And so I always preferred it better to play. Yeah. Now, I always wonder why it hadn't been professionalized. Like, why aren't the pros, the 7-footers, the masters of the game, why aren't they playing this on a professional level? Just because nobody professionalized it.
Yep.
You know, we started off as a retired NBA league.
Right.
But we've gotten younger every year. You know, some of our stars are in their 20s now who can really hoop at this level. You know, the 3-on-3 game is a personal game. It's mano a mano. If you can't pass, dribble, shoot, and defend, you're going to get cooked. So you got to have it all. You can't be a specialist in the Big Three.
Facts.
You can't be a defensive guy or just a rebound guy or three-point guy and get success. You got to be able to do it all. So it's its own sport in so many ways.
When you say the Big Three is its own sport, I mean, I totally agree with that. And the physicality is definitely bar none. It's probably one of the most physical professional leagues that play basketball right now. Looking forward, do you think that you offered Caitlin Clark $5 million to come play? I don't know if those reports were true, but do you ever foresee you incorporating women into the Big Three format?
Well, it's not really up to me. You know, at the end of the day, the players pick who they want to play with. That's what's unique about the Big Three. It's not GM saying, I want this guy or that guy. Mm-hmm. It's players saying, hey, I know I can win with these guys. And so if they pick a female player, then she's in the Big Three. Yes, we'll see how she do. So it's not up to me to say if she can play or not.
Okay.
It's up to the players to believe that she can help them win a championship. You know, if they don't believe that, then it won't happen. But if they do believe there's a player out there that can do that and deal with the physicality of the league, then maybe. You know, the only reason she came on the map is because, of course, as far as our sponsors and things like that, and somebody breaking that barrier, it would have been, you know, epic to watch, and it would have unlocked a lot of dollars for the league. But at the end of the day, we've had some small guards like Nate Robinson, Mahmoud Abdul-Rauf, guys like that come in and really get loose in the league and have a good run. So she's that kind of player. So, you know, maybe a small player like that who can shoot and pass could have some success. You know,
Come on, Cube.
I can say what somebody can't do, but I'm just saying down low.
Yeah.
The bigger, like in the paint, it's too ugly.
But even the Mahmoud and Nate Robert, I mean, look, Cheryl Miller used to work out with me and Reggie Theus and Kiki Vandeweghe up at UCLA when we were all in our primes and playing. And as good as she was, I mean, she just didn't have that level of physicality. And Caitlin Clark, you know, I feel like Cube, these dudes, a national TV audience, all the media attention this is going to attract. She is not. This is my attitude as a player. She is not going to use me for clownage fodder. I'm not being clownage fodder by Caitlin Clark.
That's what the beautiful thing about it is. Very debatable, of course. Yeah. And until somebody wants to try it, and break that barrier and be like the Billie Jean King of it, then it'll always be debatable. But to me, owning a league, you can't say what a player can't do.
Right.
You got to give them the shot, and if they can do it, they can do it. And if not, they won't be on the court. We all know in professional sports, it's a level of play that you have to be able to achieve. If you can't get up to that threshold, you shouldn't be on the court.
Yeah, well, and I'll tell you this, though. I definitely watch it. I'd pay to see it, you know, that's the bottom line. I definitely watch it.
Business wise, it would have unlocked millions of dollars for the league.
One more thing on the big three, because 5 years ago, I read an article where you had a vision for the league. Now, and we fast forward to present day, the big 3-on-3 is now an Olympic sport. You obviously have your league as a professional league. You have Unrivaled that has sort of adopted a similar format on the women's side. And you also have the Pro 16 League sponsored by Puma on the AAU grassroots circuit that just dropped an announcement that they're going to run a whole 3-on-3 series. What's the long-term vision, Cube, for the big three? And do you see it evolving beyond a league that, you know, is filled with retired NBA guys?
It's a level of play. So, you know, I believe we have to maintain that level of play. And then, you know, either guys can play at this level or not. You know, a lot of ex-NBA players get into the league and get locked up and they can't do nothing. And there's guys who never sniffed an NBA court can actually get loose in the big three. So you either have this skill set, you know, it's kind of like UFC and boxing. Mm-hmm. You know, it's two different skill sets. And so just because a guy can do the UFC thing, that don't mean he can just only box and vice versa. So we feel like there's 5-on-5 specialists and there's 3-on-3 specialists. Now, our long-term view is, our vision is to continue to have the best 3-on-3 league in the world. And if you look around, we have the best 3-on-3 league in the world with the best players. That should be in the Olympics. That's a different story. So at the end of the day, continue to grow our league and continue to introduce our league around the world and dominate the professional 3-on-3 space.
In terms of the initial kind of attraction for fans, I mean, it seems to me that being the cultural icon that you are, I mean, you were just as much a bigger part of that as the talent on the floor, because it was – mainly older guys, retired guys, but it seems like you would have to really invest a lot of energy in terms of what you did at the inception of the league, promotional wise, and you probably still do. But your name attracts crowds.
Yeah, without a doubt. You know, I've been doing this for a decade now, and It's really about my past work has made people even look this way, just to see, okay, what Cube doing this?
What's he up to? Yeah.
And so they come, they like it, they love it. They find out, hey, these guys are still in this format. They're, you know, they're just as good as any other basketball player in the world in the half court, 3-on-3, first to 50. They probably can't play a, you know, NBA schedule, 82 games and, you know, back-to-backs and 3 games and 4 nights and all that crazy stuff. But, you know, 1 week, one game a week to 50, these guys are next level. So at the end of the day, you know, we got the best, and it's really about just making sure we continue to grow that and make the league bigger and bigger.
And nobody embodies that to me, Cube, more so than Joe Johnson, ISO Joe. He had that great run in the Big Three, and all my – not all, but the younger generation of guys were coming out saying, oh, he can play in the NBA. He can dominate. I'm trying to tell him, slow your roll. It's half court. How would Giannis, how would his game translate? Open court, best transition player maybe in the history of the game. There is no transition in the Big Three. How would his game translate to the Big Three in your mind?
I still think he would dominate. You know, it's we still have a place for the big man in the Big Three. Mm-hmm. You still play with your back to the basket if that's what you want to do. And, you know, use your post moves. Or, you know, he could stretch the floor a little bit, so he could dribble. So I don't think he would have any problem in dominating in the Big Three. Because he got it all anyway. And if you could pass, dribble, shoot, and defend at a high level, you should be fine in the Big Three.
And Cube, to follow up on Giannis, man, you was in L.A. when the Lakers were going through the drama when Kobe, he wanted to bounce at one point, you know, ended up staying. How do you view, like, that whole scenario? Like, staying with one team, does that tarnish his legacy? If he was to bounce, or is it strengthen his legacy if he does stay with the Bucks?
You know, if he bounces and get more championships, I don't think that can hurt his legacy. But if he stay and get more championships in Milwaukee, his legacy to me would be bigger. You know, that's the right way to do it. You know, if he's at the end of your career, chasing a championship is fine. You know, there's nothing wrong with that.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're still young and you're still the piece, you know, you want people to come play with you and bring championships where you are, not relocate.
Yeah.
Facts.
So listen, man, let's talk about ball players that are rappers. And Dame Lillard, for me, I'm not a rap aficionado by any stretch of the imagination. I tell you, I like the hooks and then the music if it's good. And the lyrics are positive and are saying something. But what's your thoughts on Dame as a rapper? I like where he's coming from, but Dame and then other ball players that may have impressed you, is it may be a short list, it may be no list, but ball player rappers, man, who do you like? I want to ask you who you don't like, but who do you like out there?
I mean, Dame is good. I mean, to me, I don't see as much as I did a few years back, which seemed like people were really, you know, showing what they could do musically. Mm-hmm. So I don't know if the athletes done took a step back from producing music. Now, I know that the ball boy, who's not in the league, did
Tweaker.
His hit.
Tweaker, yeah.
And so, you know, people are multifaceted. So I never count people out just because they do one occupation well, mm-hmm. you know. Mm-hmm. You know, it was all kind of players that, I mean, people got talent, man. And basketball is one element. But, you know, there's people out there that can still do it. They're just not doing it as much from what I see.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so you don't look down at, I mean, you don't like, man, they think they can do it. This looks so easy to them. They think they can do this. I mean, you respect the fact that they are trying to, you know, express themselves in music and I mean, how do you look at these guys?
If they don't laugh at me trying to play basketball, I won't laugh at me trying to rap. You know what I'm saying? Let's just be cool.
Keep it real.
Yeah.
I ain't in no position to be laughing at nobody. So, no, if you could do it, you know, it ain't about who you are, man. It's about what you can get to come out the speakers.
Yeah.
That's what it's about. If you can get it to come out the speakers and make people dig it, coming out the speakers, you're in the music business.
Yeah. So Mr. Ronnie got a triple-double. Have you ever had a triple-double, brother?
I probably have.
Okay. All right.
You know, we in the game, you know, you get a lot of shots up.
Yeah.
So I know I got more than 10. Mm-hmm. A lot of bricks. I done got 10 rebounds. And I could dish the ball. So I probably had a triple double.
Okay.
And in terms of music, people, I used to play Cube at Crenshaw High School on Tuesday nights when I was in the NBA with Philip Bailey, Harvey Mason Sr., whose son Harvey Mason Jr. was the first commissioner of the Big Three, a great, great drummer, some other great musicians. Marvin Gaye would show up out there, man. And these guys were okay. Now, but from what you've seen, the Chris Browns and then the other musicians, give me a top 3 to 5 guys that you've seen out there who really got game as musicians.
Oh, man, yeah. You know, Chris Brown's one of them. I've seen The Game. The rapper The Game is dope. Snoop got game. NLE Chopper. Gilly from Gilly the Kid.
Yeah. Oh, Gilly, nice. Gilly, nice.
That lefty. Gilly, nice. Talking trash. That lefty jumper.
A lot of trash. That's what he don't just play. He talking. And so that's how the game is supposed to be played, how he play it. Just, you know, talking mess, making buckets, and nothing but total confidence. And so, there's a few people out there that can really get down.
Well, listen, man, we appreciate you coming by here and spending some time with us. And the Big Three, you founded it in 2017. You start your 8th season in Chicago, June 14th. It kicks off, and I mean, what a brilliant, brilliant concept. And I just like the fact, again, that you give these youngsters a chance. That final question, but the you dropped the age limit from 27 to 22.
Yes.
What is that going to do in terms of these old heads and them having a place to you know, express themselves on the floor? I mean, is it going to cut down their opportunities?
Maybe. You know, this is a pro league, so you either can play or not.
Yep.
It's not a league just because you
– oh.
You want to get a run on, you know, on weekends. Right. You know what I'm saying? This is a league that you have to have a level of play. And once you can't come up to that level no more. Unfortunately, you're no longer a pro player, at least in the Big Three. So we want to keep a standard. And we have to create our own superstars to really be a league. We can't just rely on the NBA.
Yeah.
And when they're done playing there to come play with us, we got to have guys who are stars on a 3-on-3 level. So developing young stars, 22 and up, guys who maybe tried the NBA and couldn't get there and maybe going our route. And sometimes the NBA, we all know, it's not talent all the time. It's numbers.
Yeah.
It's attitudes. It's personalities. It's politics, you know, as well. So just because a guy's not there, that don't mean he's not one of the best basketball players in the world. So we want to develop our own athletes.
So it's not going to be like when I came into the NBA in the late 70s, how they had a quota system. 6 white guys had to be in Kansas City, had to be in Cleveland, had to be in Milwaukee. You're not going to hold down any spots for the 40-year-olds or the 50-year-olds. There's no quota system for the old guys.
It ain't about your name, man. It's about the game.
Yes, sir.
So if you still got the game, you can play. Just because you name this and name that, people don't care about paying for that. You know, people want to see if you can still ball. And if you can at this level, you know, it's probably a spot for you.
Yeah, appreciate it.
You know, we got more people. We had 120 people at our combine.
Damn.
For 24 spots.
Wow.
So it's actually less than that, 16 spots, excuse me. So it's competitive. There's people that want to play.
Yeah.
So we want to get the best 3-on-3 players in the world.
Yeah, well, you struck a chord, man, with the sporting public out there, man, and continued success to you in all facets. Your Friday The movie
The Last
is
Friday.
Tidy Lister was a friend of mine, man, that we played ball at University High School all the time together. And Debo was out of his mind, but he was a great guy. But, man, just continued success to you and everything you're doing, man. And we appreciate you so much stopping by here at District with us, man. Appreciate you.
Anytime, every time, man. Let's do this again.
This has been a Bucks Plus audio production.